afternoon. Today is Monday, July the 14th, 200th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, Humboldt County Superintendent of Schools, working in the summer, Gary Eagles.
You don't have your hard. You don't have your hard hat on.
Though. I don't have my hard hat, but I don't have my tie. But I, we're there every day and watching the ground around us get torn up. And
yeah, the dust fly. Yeah, it's kind of been impressive. So we'll spend a little bit of time talking about how that is progressing, as well as kind of do a wrap up of last year and look see ahead at the upcoming year. Things have changed a little bit, and we'll talk about some of those different challenges that are out there, as well as get some good news on the construction progress when we come back. Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Gary Eagles from the County Office of Ed. But before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from Merrill Marco in 1992. Quote, "I sometimes look into the face of my dog Stan and see wistful sadness and existential angst, when all he's actually doing is slowly scanning the ceiling for flies."
Oh, that's a good one.
Ain't that the truth? Yeah. So, what do you think when you look in the rearview mirror at what last year was?
Well, I'll tell you, last year was a real watershed year in the most significant ways. The first being that we were operating in our public school systems under a different funding model called the local control funding formula. It was also the first year this spring when every school district had to develop a local control accountability plan, which basically will serve as a document to guide instructional delivery and budgetary priorities within every school district. And what was unique about that process is that, of course, as the term implies, local control was emphasized. Local school districts, administrations, working with their parents and staffs, were able to identify what they wanted to do to advance the academic achievement of all their students.
And that's school district by school district, county schools with one document.
No. That was every school district. And it was a planning process that resulted in a plan that then had to be submitted to the county office with their budgets, and then we had to look and see if they had met all of the required elements in their plan.
So you guys had to prove it.
We didn't approve it in the standpoint that we placed our judgment on top of it. We just had to check to make sure that they had completed it.
Kind of like a tax return.
Kind of similar.
All the boxes were filled in
and properly done. And then on the other side, though, we had to make sure that their budgets, in fact, did align with what they said they were going to do. So, for example, if they said they were going to expand services in a particular area, for example, an elementary school might have expanded a literacy program at the second and third grade levels, we would then look to their budget to see if they increased line items that would be pursuant to that. And then we would give it our blessing and move on from there. And that was a different kind of interactive process with our districts. We normally work very closely with them as they develop their budgets. That's what we've done historically.
But this was also on the instruction level. Yeah,
that's right. And now they had to be brought together.
How much time did that take of your staff to coordinate and approve that through more than routinely happens?
Hundreds of hours by two of my key people, one in the business department and one individual in my curriculum support division. So Lynette Kerr in the business side and Cheryl Ingham on the instructional side worked collaboratively together with districts, and hundreds of hours again by each of them. Now, and that's, of course, it took far more than that on the ground with our individual districts and what their processes were. And I have to say that my staff was very impressed by the creativity and the diligence of our districts in going through this process for the first time.
Better product at the end of the process than what you think may have popped up otherwise?
Oh, I definitely believe school districts discovered a lot of things about themselves, about their constituent groups, about their students, where they had a time to really engage in some conversations. What I think is going to be even more meaningful is I think this is just a starting point. I think the conversations that are going to take place in subsequent years are going to be even better. And as people get used to these processes and recognize how meaningful they are, you know, because a lot of times districts, like every other business, might develop a plan, and what does it do? It sits on a shelf, doesn't become active. These are plans.
What was that?
These are plans.
Active.
Active. Implemented. You know, actually something that won't gather just dust, but actually be followed through.
Result in something positive.
And the fact that you have to revisit these every year, or every time there's a significant change in your budget. So it'll be kept current. It's an excellent
process.
Would
arduous be a fair word to apply?
It was for a lot of people trying to get their handle around it. And I'll tell you what made it more difficult than perhaps it should have been. The state tried to simplify the template process so that they could emphasize the local control aspects. But I have to say that the interpretation of the document itself left a lot to be desired. So there was a great struggle to kind of fill in the boxes the way the state wanted them. So the state was trying to structure something that had some degree of uniformity and yet be flexible. It didn't fit. You know, you got 1,000 different districts, and you're not going to have one template that's going to fit all 1,000 districts very well.
I'm thinking more of the cat herding syndrome.
Yeah, that's part of it, too.
Because you do have the different definitions, or what's important here versus what they may perceive as important, but they don't give you enough words to really know what is being said.
So the State Board of Education is now engaged in a process of looking at that original template and going, okay, how can we perhaps make it a little bit easier to work with in the future?
I would think that they could call about, 58 different superintendents? And say, what do you guys think, and have the lift be done at the level of the people who had to do it?
Well, that would make too much sense, Brian.
Okay, well, just a concept. Well, something to float up the...
But they have at least asked for some input, so we are certainly providing some input about it, and I think we'll see improvements to the process.
And now that the process has occurred once, is this an annual event?
Yes. It you're supposed to develop a three-year plan and update it every 3 years. So on an annual basis, yes.
Rolling three.
A rolling three, yep.
KINS, News and Information Times, 319. Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Gary Eagles. Gary, the process that you went through to wrap up last year or throughout last year, whether it was for funding or special this or special that, is it becoming more and more onerous, more driven by reports, by paperwork, by oversight, by or is it being simplified at all because of the computers and the opportunity to report almost instantaneously on various things? So if I have a question about a particular area, I fire it off, and sometime in the next day or two, we get the reply.
Well, but keep in mind, when you have computer-based information, you have to have somebody that actually inputs the data. And then you have to develop the program to be able to extract the data in the way in which you want to have it. No, I things are not simpler. They are far more complex. The state and federal government requires things that are just absolutely unbelievable and, yes, onerous in terms of a responsibility. It was interesting because in this LCAP process and with the local control funding formula, there was a great deal of emphasis on aligning the new district plans with any other obligations you might have for federal Title I dollars or whatever have you. So at least the state recognized that they were trying to make sense of some of the paperwork. But everything is so data management, data accountable these days. And all of your funding is driven by the students and recording their attendance. And in this case, whether they're low socioeconomic or English language learners or their foster youth. And if you don't input the data correctly, and if you don't do it within a certain time period, you don't get a chance to go back and correct it. It could have major implications for funding. So data management is becoming far more complex. Ultimately, the communication that is provided and the information you are gathering about students and about your district will help in the planning process. But to get the data from parents, to get the data input into the system, to get the system to work properly, to feed properly to the state of California and the state to the feds and all of that, that is very difficult. We do a lot of and time-consuming, and we're spending a lot of time and resources on increasing the burden on clerical staff, computer staff, to be able to, you know, handle those processes. It may sound like, well, we'll just go online and submit this new grant application at the federal level. But the bureaucracy behind that online, we still haven't smoothed that out at all.
It's like an email attachment. Yeah, the email takes amount of time. It's the attachment that takes a little bit of effort.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it can be. Well, and you have to get registered, and then you have to get a number assigned.
Remember the password, yeah.
And then you got to remember the password. That's right. And then in the federal government processes, every 3 months you have to renew your registration to keep yourself current, because they treat school districts the same way they treat private contractors. So you have to keep registering yourself. You'd think they'd have a process that said, well, if you're a school, you only have to register your school once unless you close the school or something, or unless you change the name of the superintendent. But no, between every 3 and 6 months, we have to go in and re-register and get reauthorized so that at some point in time, if we ever wanted to submit a grant application to the federal government, we'd be current. Those are the things that drive local people nuts.
So as you look at some of those different things that are out there, is that just grant funding that drives this train, or is this something else, or is this just the trend going on and everybody's doing it and you're going to have to staff up five people just because?
Yes, part of it is that's the way it's going and we have to get on board with it. Part of it is that the system itself demands more information. The more capability you have to gather information, the more information people want, and they want reports about different kids and different programs and the results of those things. So, yes, the state and the federal government are demanding more data be tracked, more data to be reported on, because I think there are constituent groups out there that are demanding it. There are political forces out there that are demanding it, and we're having to provide it. And it's not going to get any better. We found out in just a few weeks ago in June that the state of California, along with Texas and one other state that I can't remember right now, has been notified by the federal government that our special education programs at the state level need intervention. Federal government doesn't think we're doing well enough by our special ed population in terms of helping them achieve success. And as a result, the federal government is going to be working with the state to beef up programs, to get better reporting on programs. And so we'll even see even more data tracking on students, particularly in the area of special education.
So what states are doing a stellar job that you ought to be patterning
That's
yourself
a
after?
Good question. They don't tell us that. They just tell us the ones that think they need
really?
Help.
And
they
Well, I'd be making a couple phone calls, shooting a couple emails and find out, are you?
Who's well, got it really?
What was the Dr. Seuss book, P.D. Eastman, Are You My Mother? Remember the Dr. Seuss series?
Yes, I do.
Right, Are You My Mother? Are you the good school? Are you the good school?
Well, it'll be interesting to find out because, again, they've identified the state as needing intervention. We'll see what that means for us.
It's 3:30. Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Gary Eagles from the County Office of Ed. Gary, the first half, we talked a little bit about some of the challenges of last year and subsequent leading into this year. What about the upcoming year? Was the state's budget not favorable necessarily, but kind
well, it's,
to education?
It's getting better, and I am pleased to say they're we're added dollars there for public education. But keep in mind, we're still backfilling the bucket that they that they emptied by about 22% several years ago. So we're still filling the bucket back up. But I am pleased to say that public education, as other and many other government services, are doing a little bit better these days because the state is fiscally healthier. However, we do have some challenges on the horizon that we're going to have to be just prepared to deal with. Funding for retirement programs, big cost item for government agencies. Our certificated staff are members of course the state teachers retirement system, classified. The other staff members of school districts are members of PERS, the public employees retirement system. Those rates are more than doubling over the next few years.
Just PERS the retirement, not the health?
Just this is just the retirement side. STERS is going to go up to 19.2% on the employer side, and the PERS is over 20%.
How's it doubling?
Well, because right now they're in PERS is about 11% and STERS is 8.25%.
But the triggering mechanism to kick it to those other figures?
And what's triggering their increase are, you know, the recessionary period, which caused the value of PERS and STERS to be deflated because of their investment portfolios, went down in many ways. There were also decisions rendered by the governing boards of those entities to grant additional benefits to retirees. They creatively, PERS especially, came up with some real creative incentives for early retirement, and frankly, they weren't well actuarially based. And as a result, when you look outward 25, 30, 35 years, neither of those programs have enough funding to be able to sustain retirees.
So kind of like Social Security?
So it is. It's, both programs, well, STERS is paid by individual employee as well as by employer. PERS for school employees, pretty much the same way, employee share plus an employer.
And there's a guaranteed.
Yes, there's a.
So when it goes down, you have to backfill. When it goes up,
yes.
You have a savings?
Well, what happens, of course, is that each system is a little bit differently, but in the STERS system, the state constitution requires the state of California also be a player in the system to ante up some money into the system for teachers. It's not true for PERS. So basically, the majority of the benefits that are paid out under both of those retirement systems are really income that's earned, in the stock market and on the investment portfolio.
So with the stock market being over 17,000.
Well, yes, but they're trying to recover from those several years in which it just plummeted. You know, that STIRS and PERS lost a lot of money on Enron, lost a lot of money in commercial property investments that they had when the commercial property portfolios tanked. And so they're getting good returns now, but they're having to make up for several years in which they were very bad. So what they're doing is they're saying, okay, employees, employers, you're going to have to ante up and raise your contribution rates. Well, that's all well and good, but again, we're only going to get so much money from the state to run the educational programs. And when you have that kind of sizable increase in that one small area, that's going to draw down a lot of dollars without increased services to kids. But it's something we have to plan ahead. The other thing is that on the local level, Brian, we are really hit with surging special ed populations. Young people are being identified with disabling conditions, whether it's autism or other disabilities, quite significantly on our area. We've always had a large proportion of our population identified as special needs, higher than the statewide average. We've always been higher. The statewide average is right around 10.5% of the population. And we typically were in the 12 to 12.5%. We're now over 14, and in some of our districts, 15% children identified with special needs, which places additional programmatic and financial responsibilities on the part of my office and on local school districts. Because we want to meet the needs of these young people, and we want to do so effectively.
So what are some of the conditions that would qualify?
Well, as I said, we're seeing a significant boost in the numbers of young people identified with on what we call on the autism spectrum scale, which is a social communication disorder. We have many children with severe disabilities, fetal alcohol syndrome, children born whose mother may have been using drugs.
So more of a spinoff of the drug culture.
We have a part of that. Interesting enough, we don't have a lot of families moving in with new kids because our general population isn't expanding in the school district, but we seem to be picking up families in moving to this area who happen to have special needs youth. So again, we are stepping forward to do what we can to meet their needs, but in terms of programs, location, and cost and startup and that sort of thing, it's again something we have to be prepared to pick up. But the numbers are moving so rapidly in that area, it's somewhat hard to keep up, to be honest with you. But
is it tough to get your head around?
Well, it is, because
to that extent?
Just in the last couple of months, we've had growth expansion of three more classrooms just run by the County Office of Education.
50% higher than the state average. That just seems goofy.
But
not that it's inaccurate, but just goofy.
But Humboldt County has, for whatever reason, has since the very first years, the California Master Plan for Special Education has had a higher than statewide average of what we call penetration rate for special education.
KINS, News and Information Times, 3:44. We'll be back with more from Gary Eagles. Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times, 3:47. Back final couple of minutes with Gary Eagles. So we see a lot of construction, see the dust, the cyclone fences, barricades are up, all that kind of good stuff. Progress is coming along nicely?
I have to give kudos to Dirk Dinsmore, who's our general contractor out of Fortuna, who and the subs that he has and the crews that are working, they're doing a phenomenal job. You're right, it looks a mess, but I'm told it's actually a positive mess to have. Do want to let people know that in the next couple of days at night, Myrtle Avenue will be closed down to cut a trench from our site to cross the street for electrical hookup. But it will be done.
Oh, are you going to pull power out of the cemetery, are you?
Well, it has to be on that side of the street where we have to make the connection, yes. We've worked out the details with the city that segment of Myrtle Avenue will be completely shut down, but only for one night. If all goes well, and we're keeping our fingers crossed, from about 10 o'clock at night until 5 a.m. in the morning. So it shouldn't impact a lot of people. There'll be a lot of signs out notifying them. And then the following day, which I believe will be, I think of the closures Wednesday, the following day Thursday, one lane will be open and to go around while we can recover the utility line.
I would think that's probably going to have more impact. Folks driving into work, folks driving home, if you had blocked Myrtle.
Why we blocked it at night only. But I do encourage people to, if at all possible, to use other routes, roadways.
Yeah, that's Caltrans phrase.
But everything is going well, and people are going to see some remarkable progress. You know, all that work underground, they've been busy, it's expensive, but you don't really appreciate it till they actually start putting walls up. And then you believe it.
Yeah, when the cement truck shows up.
Yeah.
And then the forms get pulled off, and all of a sudden, you get a sense of easy to follow
accomplishment. And you should be able to, we should be seeing that within 3-4 weeks of the walls going up.
Really?
Yes.
You're running that close.
That far around, yeah.
Very cool. So about in time for school to start, we'll start seeing things happening.
Yeah. In fact, the whole parking lot will have been repaved, restriped by second week of August.
Good stuff. Thanks for coming by.
Yes. Thanks for having me again. Always a pleasure.
We've been talking shop with Gary Eagles. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.